This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I just got done visiting my dad. See how he's doing. And time to head home. All the beeping that you might be hearing is because dad's car, which may soon be my car, is mad. It's mad. Because the analog brake lamp, the regular incandescent bulb, burned out. And it was pretty hard to find another incandescent bulb at this point. There were all these LED bulbs. So, okay, great. So I just upgraded to LED bulbs in the back. Well, this car is a 1998 Lincoln Continental, which means that it had some circuits in it that would say, oh, there's not much voltage going back there to that bulb. Therefore, that bulb must be burned out. I'm going to adjust this just a little bit. Sorry for the... So, of course, when you put LED bulbs in the back, then it still thinks the bulbs are burned out. And so it's beeping at me, and it's every time I turn the turn signal, it's going ticket, 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 like the bulbs are burned out. So, you know, unintended consequences of technologies. And at this point, the solution is to get another blinker module, which I have ordered, but it's an old enough car, I'm not sure it's actually going to fit. Even though Amazon tells me it's going to fit, we will see. Or I can actually buy resistors, 50-watt resistors, to put in parallel with the bulbs to put enough load on the circuit to where it doesn't think the bulb is burned out. There's an irony in this somewhere, but it's not too hard to find. We hear how fast that's flashing. Tick, 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 tick. Yeah, that's because it thinks the bulbs are burned out in back, because I have put LED bulbs in back. Interesting. But anyways, all is well at work. We're puttering along. It's an exciting time. We just got all kinds of stuff going, and projects, and forms, and discussing all sorts of permutations about a lot of different stuff, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's good. I did land the book last weekend. Yay! Book 8! Book 8 is landed. I'm editing now. And I'll do just enough editing to fit within a 2-week time frame, and then got to get the cover done. But I think I've got costuming for the kids, and I think I know the pieces that I want to do for the cover, and so we'll get that put together as well. So now it's just a matter of kind of polishing up Book 8 a little bit and then getting it out to whatever beta readers I have left after Book 7. And too much talking about sex in Book 7. You know, so it'll be fine. So we got to get that done. And then, oh, hold on, my dad is calling. One moment, hold on. Hi, Pop! Right. Yeah, no, all it is a letter that says that they're increasing the monthly thing by 2%. So, that's all it is. What? I don't know who Helen is. I've got to call them and ask them why they sent it to us. But... No. No. Nobody is going to move you out. You'll be fine. They just got the wrong address on it. So, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Okie dokie, I'll see you tomorrow. Bye. So, yes. So, Dad got a letter at Maranatha there where he lives. He, quote unquote, owns his duplex. Not really, but it's his until he dies. Well, for some reason, they sent another letter to somebody named Helen there. And I left it there unopened, and I already told him what his letter was. So apparently after I left, he opened the letter and put it under his magnifier and realized it was to Helen. And then he was wondering if people were getting ready to move him out. I was like, no, no, you're fine. All is well. All is well. So anyways, yes. So book 8, we're good on book 8. Puttering along. It's going well. It's the end of the first octet, and then everything changes. So then we start the second octet. So it's going to be 8 down, 16 books to go. It's going to be great. Anyway, so there's that. All is well with the family. We are coming up to the 9 years worth of podcasts. 9 years worth of podcasts is actually in 2 weeks. I'm started talking to the family about can we get together and record a 9 years worth of podcast. Man, it doesn't seem like it's been that long since we recorded the 8 years worth of podcasts, but I just keep flapping my gums. So, and as I've said in the past, this is an amazing time to be alive. So many things moving, shaking. There's several spots in scripture that talk about the foundations shaking. Really interesting time to be alive. I came across, speaking of interesting times to be alive, I came across a YouTube video about the end of scarcity. And I don't actually have the name, but it was something about how will we live in the age of at the end of scarcity or something like that. And I started listening to it while I was replacing light bulbs last night, and it's got some interesting stuff in it. And then in addition to that, I was watching some Netflix stuff, and I thought, well, there you go. Because this guy was talking with the end of scarcity, he was talking about the unintended consequences of technology and how there is some really, really disruptive technologies, not 10 years out or 20 years out, but maybe 50 years out. And I found it interesting. But he was specifically talking about the end of scarcity. And we talked several times about how that there will be newer technologies coming with the loss of jobs and all that sort of thing. But beyond that, if we can get through that and get to the next thing, which people are actually working on now, they are actually working on this now. If we can get to the true next thing, it's going to get really interesting. I mean, he was in leading up to the next thing, was talking about some interesting side effects. You know, he said the typewriter was invented to deal with a shortage of scribblers that were needed to handle the explosion of commercial paperwork in the 19th century, and the typewriter did the trick and helped with that, but it also brought a lot of women out of the kitchen and then increased the divorce rate, which is, you know, side effects. And he was talking about the fact that when you look at life before the invention of social media and after the invention, you know, that you see a lot of the changes that are going on in society. But one of the things that has been a kind of a bedrock idea from the beginning, and you see it even expressed in social media because people get unhappy when they're looking at social media. Why do they get unhappy when they're looking at social media? Because people feel like, well, my life isn't as interesting as that person, or look at all the interesting stuff that person has, and I don't have it. This idea of the haves and the have-not, and the idea of scarcity, that there's only so much stuff. And he traced it back to a bunch of different places, like tin mines and pewter, and how that, like, Cornwall in England was really a big deal because they could make all this pewter and they grew wealthy, and then other people came in and, you know, started making it as well, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all through our lives, we have had this idea inherent in us with scarcity. However, apparently people are actually working on stuff of like we see in Star Trek. It said that back in 1959, Richard Feynman was talking about the fact that according to the laws of physics, you could reduce down the size of computing to where each bit is only a single atom. And if you could do that, you can make extremely powerful computers that are really small. But also, if you could do that, if you could actually build stuff an atom at a time, you could build anything. Anything. They said, you know, that was kind of an interesting idea up until about 1981, when a couple of people at IBM invented a scanning tunneling microscope that allowed you to pick up atoms and put them together. So, for instance, you could pick up a hydrogen atom, and you could pick up another hydrogen atom, and you could put them together, and then pick up an atom of oxygen and put them together and make water. Now, I have to think that this takes forever. I mean, I just have to think that this probably takes forever at this point. I had a 3D printer in my basement for a while. It was one of the coolest things in the world. You literally could build anything. It was so, well, not anything, but I mean, it was so cool. You could just make something up in the computer and shoot it over to it, and it would sit there and go, you know, and lay down plastic, and it would, it had like a 1 millimeter resolution, something like that. It was good enough. I mean, it was good enough that it was cool stuff. And theoretically, if you can do that, you can build pretty much anything. Now, I'm not sure you can still build gold, because it only goes down to the atom stage, but you can build compounds. There's a ton of stuff that you can build if you have raw materials, like hydrogen and oxygen and, you know, carbon. I mean, there's just a ton of stuff you can build. So, this was kind of news for me, that there's people who are actually working on this. Actually trying to get machines that just allow them to put stuff together. I'm getting my mail, one moment. And they said, you know, at MIT, there's actually people working at stuff like this in other universities, and they all agree that they are going to make this happen. Now, you know, like I said, initially, it may take like 2 weeks to actually make a cup of tea, but we all know that's going to get faster. And then this is where his talk started getting interesting, because when you project forward, if you actually have something that can build anything else, including itself, then what happens to society at that point? And he really didn't have any kind of great answer for what happens to society at that point. But he did note that this idea is not as far-fetched as you might first think, because in fact, nature does this already. We build, well, we don't. Women do. I don't. the glorious and wondrous female component of our species have within them the capability of building a human being from scratch, or at least providing an environment where a human being can compile themselves from scratch, which is just an extraordinary thing. It's just an unbelievable thing. So, you know, it can be done. And in this video, they quoted David Lee. He's a Royal Society research professor at the University of Manchester. And what his research group is working on is the ultimate in miniaturization and is trying to design and make molecular machines. And they're working on this. He said, what they've managed to do so far is the most sophisticated molecular robot yet. It's built up of about 150 atoms, and it's able to manipulate other molecular structures just the same way as a robot on a factory assembly line. Their molecular robot is able to manipulate molecular-sized structures and add atoms and clusters of atoms in exactly the right places that we want and produce different structures depending on how we program it. Okay, that's a breakthrough. and they're gonna keep working on this. Now, if you got one of those things, as soon as you get the first one built, then you can have it build another one. And if it's like solar powered, you don't really need to be connected up to anything. And then if you build another one and you give it to a friend, they can build another one and you can build another one and give it to somebody else. And then they can build them and they can build them and they can build them. And pretty soon, however long it takes, I mean, you end up with, pretty soon, everybody has one, and they can build whatever they want. That's a really interesting thought experiment. That everybody, you need food, you just replicate it, just like Star Trek. Now, Star Trek, the thing about it is, though, Star Trek just makes this seem like this is just going to be a utopia. The other thing that he mentioned in this is that theoretically you could build supercomputers that were the size of dust motes, and you could network them all together, and you could just spray them on your wall, and you would just have these incredibly complex artificial intelligence. This is like 50, 100 years down the road. Stuff that for all practical purposes is invisible, but then that can help your life as well. And you know, you basically can make anything you want. You have all the food you want. Whatever. And what does this bode for the human race? And I would say that what it bodes for the human race is that we'll just figure out a way of killing ourselves faster. You know, it's I was watching this other Netflix special. It's part of a series called The Naked Truth or something like that. And it was about the fentanyl addictions. And I was thinking after I had read this YouTube or watched this YouTube video. So in other words, anybody can make any kind of drugs or compounds in the far-flung future in their house. What is that going to do to human beings? And what is the whole virtual reality thing going to do to human beings? I mean, it's a really fascinating time to be alive. And some would say, well, Jesus has to come back and help us with all of this, because we are really going to mess things up if he doesn't. But it's interesting, because in my little world and in my framework, obviously, we do have this destroyer within us. And in my way of thinking, God gave us toil after the fall, not really because of a punishment per se, But because we needed to be constrained, because of the horror of being in that fallen state and living forever. And we are fast approaching this potential for us to undo what God was trying to accomplish in the garden. And that is, he gave us toil, I think, to help us deal with this new corruption that was within us. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I was talking to a buddy a couple of days ago, and I said, well, you know, one way that you can look at technology is you can say that technology, in fact, is man shaking his fist in the face of God and saying, I will not be subject to your curse. I will not be subject to your toil. I will make myself faster. I will make myself smarter. I will increase my presence. I will become like God. And, you know, it's interesting. All of this stuff that we are doing to cause us more convenience and more control and more certainty. And yet there are these side effects. And when we look at our world and all the things that are in it, and then we see also how people are becoming less and less tolerant, and there's more vitriol, and there's more anger, and there's more greed, and those things, all that backlash, all those unexpected consequences of it, really, I just think, come from nothing more than the flesh and our refusal to allow ourselves to be subjugated and to learn from the things that toil can teach us. Because there is definitely a patience that you can derive from being outside, gardening, farming, watching stuff grow, seeing the processes of life. And it's different than what we learn when we are immersed in technology and everything is accelerated and everything is presented to attract our attention and show us how much better things could be if we just buy this or buy that. It's a fascinating experience for all of this. And it's going to be a truly, truly fascinating 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And honestly, if they make all of the advances that they're talking about possibly making in terms of medicine, who knows? I might be around to see it. I used to have a sign on my wall that said, I'm looking forward to 2078, because that would have been 120 years after I was born, and surely by then I would have died and gone to see Jesus. But who knows at this point? 2078, I mean, that's 60 years away. And that's plenty of time for all this astonishing stuff to happen. And there are actually people talking about the fact that if you're alive today, you may live until you're 150. Because there'll be just enough advance in the next 10 years to get you another 10 years, and then that 10 years to get you another 10 years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've got plenty of stuff to write. I'm never going to run out of stuff to write. But that's an interesting, fascinating possibility. So we'll see. We'll see. I do know this, that he has been faithful and kind, and that he will continue to be faithful and kind. and he will be good to us. And it is an amazing life when you can put your hope and trust in that. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.